In the late summer of 1940, Adolf Hitler was master of more of the world than any man since Caesar. On this evening 60 years ago, Britain was expecting a Nazi invasion in a matter of hours, followed by a quick conquest within weeks. Many regarded Britain's situation as hopeless and were resigning themselves to a Western Europe dominated by Germany. But on this day and the next in 1940, Germany's advance would be halted by two battles 3,000 miles apart. One battle was over England, and the other was in Washington. Veteran broadcaster Robert Trout reported both of them to American radio listeners. He recalls the week now that turned the tide of a war America had yet to join.
Great events in progress often conceal their consequences, which is why history is often a more satisfying, if less exciting, pursuit than journalism. On this day, 60 years ago, Germany lost the Battle of Britain, but no one knew it. In New York, my colleagues and I at CBS were braced to report a catastrophe. The fall of France in June had been a shock, but the fall of England seemed as unimaginable as it was imminent.
8:55 Eastern Daylight Time. And in the absence of Elmer Davis, who is on vacation, Columbia and its affiliated stations bring you Bob Trout and the news.
We've just heard Albert Warner in Washington.
Since the start of the war, CBS had scheduled a 5-minute nightly newscast in the middle of the evening. The ad agencies hated it. It not only cut into 5 minutes of advertising time, it broke the evening's rhythms of comedy with the unwelcome realities of Europe, which were not comic at all.
London has been raided 4 times so far, but today's air raid reports sound pretty much like the air raid descriptions every day. A lot of noise, some casualties, some damage, and determined resistance by the British.
America may still have been neutral, but CBS was not. There were many Anglophiles at 485 Madison Avenue, none more passionate than I, and I still have the isolationist hate mail to prove it. If we had failed to dramatize the Battle of France, we would not make the same mistake with the Battle of Britain. We would bring London alive to American listeners. Late in August, my boss, Paul White, decided to set up a broadcast of pickups from London at midnight. When a BBC announcer cued Ed Murrow, none of us at CBS had any idea we were about to catch the first sirens of the Battle of Britain.
And now we take you into the streets of blacked-out London, and so to Trafalgar Square. Waiting there is Edward Murrow, known to you as Columbia's European director. Come in, Ed Murrow.
Suddenly, that evil shrill whistled into 30 million American homes.
This is Trafalgar Square.
The noise that you hear at the moment is the sound of the air raid sirens. I'm standing here just on the steps of St. Martin's in the Fields. A searchlight just burst into action off in the distance. One single beam sweeping the sky above me now.
The night before, several German planes had strayed off course and mistakenly jettisoned a bomb load over London. It would be a fateful navigation error. The British government assumed that German strategy had turned to civilian bombing. Within 24 hours, the RAF hit Berlin. For the next 2 weeks, 1,000 German planes a day hit English military targets. Then, on September 3rd, daily attacks began in waves over London itself. In New York, the CBS news budget did not accommodate a staff of news writers. So each night, after dinner, I would sit down and piece together what was happening in London for the 8:55 news. The ad agencies were right. The news did break the flow of entertainment. On September 5th, German bombers have attacked
London heavily tonight for the third raid of the day and are also bombing 8 other British towns. The second London raid this afternoon interrupted a session of the House of Commons. After the members of Parliament came
less than an hour ago, the all-clear signal sounded in London. The 7th raid of the day was over. But operating on a 24-hour schedule, the German bombers seemed to have pierced London's defenses. As the German planes dropped illuminating flares, then roared down to attack the targets.
On September 7th, we were shocked to hear that the Germans were undertaking indiscriminate night bombing of London. The world's largest city has been
going through the worst air attack of all time, and apparently still going on. Thousands of German planes flew over England, bombing London in squadrons made up of hundreds. The destruction of civilian lives and property has been called ghastly. Observers in London are inclined to believe that today's tremendous raids are the beginning of Germany's win-or-lose attempt at last.
In New York, it was dawning on most of us at CBS that our daily newscasts were assuming a larger character. We were reporting the most savage challenge to civilized order in world history. It's hard today to convey the sense of danger we felt, not knowing the outcome. All we knew was that Hitler's boasts of a thousand-year Reich were not being taken lightly. Then, on September 11th, London suddenly struck back with a jolting barrage of anti-aircraft.
The British are defending the city with the fiercest anti-aircraft fire ever heard in London. The clear night sky is filled with bursting shells, and the shrapnel from the defending British guns is falling on London streets like hail, according to the latest reports. Today in Berlin, Nazi spokesmen said that the German Air Force will continue the onslaught until the giant city is smashed into impotent ruins.
And when London was smashed, we all expected the invasion would begin. There was a rumor that the Queen herself was practicing pistol shooting in the gardens of Buckingham Palace. If the Germans were to take out the royal family, she was personally going to take out a few Germans first. That same day, Churchill spoke to the English-speaking world and invoked a thousand years of British history.
Prime Minister Winston Churchill made a speech today, broadcast by many of these stations, saying that the attempted German invasion may come at any time, and the next week
therefore
will be
we
the
must
most
regard
important
the next week or so as a very important week for us in our history. It ranks with the days when the Spanish Armada was approaching the Channel and Drake was finishing his game of bowls, or when Nelson stood between us and Napoleon's Grand Army at Boulogne.
History was cheap in 1940, but coming from a man who had proved a prophet so often before, we did not disregard it.
CBS correspondent Edward R. Murrow in London said that for years there has been a prophetic quality about Mr. Churchill's speeches, and that quality was present in today's broadcast. And there seems to be a feeling in England that the Battle of Britain is now approaching its climax. In Washington,
another battle was approaching a climax in Washington. For weeks, Congress had been locked in a fight over the future of American isolation. The issue was the first peacetime draft in American history. As Churchill spoke of Nelson and Boulogne, Congress made a decision. At 8:57, I was handed a bulletin while still on the air.
And here's a late bulletin from Washington. Senate and House conferees tonight have just agreed on a conscription bill requiring all men between 21 and 35 inclusive to register for military training.
One night, I walked out onto Madison Avenue and 52nd Street sometime after midnight. I was struck by the brightness of the moon on St. Patrick's Cathedral. A bomber's moon, I thought, and I wished I were in London. Over the next two nights, September 12th and 13th, the news from London grew better. Then, on the 15th, Germany launched a massive daylight attack, and the RAF was waiting.
The German planes came in swarms, and the British Air Ministry claims the biggest victory since the siege of London began. 175 German planes shot down, 30 British planes lost. Never has London seen such air battles as were fought over the city today, and the Germans scored direct hits on Buckingham Palace again.
I would continue to report German bombing of London into November. We would call it the Blitz, and Ed would make some of his most famous broadcasts from London rooftops. But I would never report an invasion. What no reporter knew was that on this day 60 years ago, Hitler gave up the fight for the air over England, and without the air, there could be no invasion. 2 days later, he told his generals that Operation Sea Lion was off. The Battle of Britain had been won before it began. We would not know the truth for another 5 years. After the war, Churchill reflected on this day from his memoirs.
We must take September the 15th as the culminating date. On this day, the Luftwaffe made its greatest concentrated effort in a resumed daylight attack on London. It was one of the decisive battles of the war, and like the Battle of Waterloo, it was on a Sunday. On September 17, as we now know, the Führer decided to postpone Ceylon indefinitely. Thus perished Operation Ceylon, and September 15 may stand as the date of its demise.
The next day, Monday, I broadcast another victory, this one in Washington. The president signed the conscription bill
in the cabinet room at the White House today. He used two pens, and he gave them to the chairman of the military committees of the Senate and the House of Representatives. With this little ceremony, conscription became law.
A year later, I was on my way to England myself to replace Ed in London. When I arrived, Londoners were singing a popular song. I remember that the last words were, "And the church bells will ring, and the whole world will sing, when they sound the last, all clear." If you heard that song today, you might well miss the real meaning of the reference to church bells. It's a detail that seems lost to history, but in 1940, there was not an Englishman alive who would have missed its meaning. Because church bells, or peace bells, as they were sometimes called in the name of security, were the universal signal for the German invasion that never came. It was why no church bell would ring in England until the German surrender in 1945.
For the peace bells will ring, and the whole world will sing, when they sound the last of peace.
Veteran broadcaster Robert Trout, he lives in New York City.